Let the spirit of the Kennedys
and the magic of the Disney brothers be with you always.
Blood and Business Legacy merch, available now.
Let's run faster,
work harder,
burn brighter
before we're gone.
Order your Blood and Business Legacy merch today.
Hi, everyone. Cassie here. I just wanted to give a trigger warning. There is brief mention of domestic violence in this episode, so if that is going to bother you, go ahead and skip to the next, and we will see you there.
Welcome to Blood and Business.
I'm Bethany.
And I'm Cassie. Today, we're looking at a brother duo whose imagination and belief in each other changed the world. Their influence is more alive today than ever before, and their mark has been recorded in every nation on Earth. They shaped the landscape of the entertainment industry that we know today and are some of the most influential people in all of American history. Their biggest mission? To spark joy and happiness in as many hearts as possible and to do it in a way that could only be explained by magic. They are
Roy and Walt Disney.
By the time he died, Walt Disney and his Imagineers had mastered the art of magic using every communication medium known to man. In 1966, Walt Disney Productions estimated that around the world, 240 million people saw a Disney movie and almost 7 million made the trek to a place that felt more like a dream than reality, a place pulled right out of Walt's imagination, Disneyland. It was here that Walt spent most of his time in the last decade of his life, and it was here that he really lived. A kingdom of magic, and just a little pixie dust, the happiest place on earth. But behind it all, from the beginning until the end, there were just two brothers and a mouse.
Oh, my heart already.
Roy and Walt Disney had literally just an ordinary, like, Midwestern American upbringing. Here's Roy with his perspective on how they grew up. Here was a man who had scant education. He's talking about Walt, by the way. His parents were not exceptional, except in their character. He was not much of an artist, but somewhere came this amazing factor of knowing what drama and comedy was. They grew up in middle America, and family was an extremely strong theme in their lives, so let's start with their parents, Flora and Elias Disney. Their dad definitely instilled in them a strong work ethic and a love for community, and then I for sure see, like, as they grow up and their ideas and projects later, they really focus a lot on the common man and, like, bringing magic to the average person mm-hmm. who doesn't get to live like that every single day. And I think that they got that from their dad.
Yeah, their definitely demographic is, like, the everyman
yes.
archetype.
Yes. And then from their mom, they learned warmth, humor, the power of enjoying life marvelously. She, like, loved a good laugh. Their parents weren't extraordinary or anything, but they gave them everything that they needed to quite literally change the world. An awareness of others, an understanding of the power of human emotion, and the drive to get it done. But for Roy and Walt, the Disney home was rarely a happy place growing up. Their dad, Elias, was the firstborn of 11 children. His parents were Irish Protestants, so, I mean, I assume that that's, like, a pretty freaking intense way to grow up.
Yeah.
He also lived on a farm in Kansas. He ended up doing lots of different jobs in his life, and Elias, their dad, expected his children to be dedicated workers in whatever venture he was involved in, but he never paid them.
Which I feel like, is that even that weird? Like, I feel like a lot of parents, especially probably back then,
yeah,
were just like, I put food on the table and give you a place to stay.
It's good enough.
Yeah.
But I feel like since Walt did become a huge entrepreneur, that probably in him just like a it was a born trait that like really bothered him, I'm sure.
Because he wanted to be like...
He was like, I'm doing a freaking good job. I should be rewarded for what I'm bringing to the table.
That makes sense.
So he was a known socialist and didn't, you know, pay his kids or anything. But he also believed that every job that they were involved in needed to be done to the highest standard. And because he struggled financially, a lot of that frustration and, like, the need for perfectionism was taken out on his family. He was borderline abusive by a lot of accounts that I read. He definitely had a temper. And this is actually one of the opportunities where Roy first showed his, like, protectiveness over Walt as his little brother. Roy was the big brother. Walt was the little brother. But it really, like... carried throughout their life. So we'll get to that. But it first kind of started like the at
catalyst.
Home.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which, in their dad's defense, but I'm a perfectionist. I'm an Enneagram one, if you know the Enneagram. And I, especially like when I'm in school or doing something for work and I feel like I'm not doing good enough, like I'm not being perfect, you like hate yourself, but you take that out on the people around you.
And it's not based in a I don't love you. It's based in like a frustration for...
It needs to be better. We all need to be better. I need to be better. Like,
yeah. This was only part of who their dad was. They knew how much he loved them. And his picture of society actually gave Roy and Walt that view of a deep care for the average person. He was super social, and a lot of times he would actually open up their home to people that he met. He would like play music in his neighborhood with just anybody else who liked to just get together and play music. He played the fiddle, and then anytime he would meet somebody who like needed a meal or like didn't have a place to stay that night, he would just invite them into their house. So Roy and Walt met like all kinds of people growing up because their dad was just here for it.
Outgoing. I feel like I'm getting like a good, well-rounded picture of their dad.
Good. And here's actually a quote from Roy to just like really drive home who their dad was. He was strict and hard with a great sense of honesty and decency. He never drank. I rarely even saw him smoke. And then from Walt's perspective, I had a tremendous respect for him. I worshipped him. Nothing but his family counted. My mother and father gave us every opportunity for education and for extra education when we showed interest and talent. The only way I could go to the show at night was to tell my dad that it was an educational picture that I wanted to see, and my dad would shell out. Interesting that he ended up creating literally the largest and most influential entertainment company of all time.
Yeah, he like just wanted, it's like a Willy Wonka story.
Yes. Like
couldn't have candy when he was little because his dad was a dentist. So when he grew up, he just created a chocolate factory.
So their nephew also said that their mom loved kids the way that Walt did. She was like a grammar school teacher. And so I'm sure that she had a big influence over Walt in that aspect. According to Roy, we had a wonderful mother who could kid the life out of my dad when he was peevish. So by all accounts, their parents adored each other and they really cherished their family. So it was like not a super fun place to grow up, but they definitely
had love and
felt like they belonged. Yes. Here's a quote I got from Bob Thomas. He's a historian and he kind of tells about the brothers' relationship. Walt and Roy were about as close as two brothers could be. Roy was 8.5 years older, but he was sort of Walt's guardian through Walt's early boyhood. He pushed him around the sidewalks of Chicago in a pram, and they were buddies on the farm in Marceline and delivered papers together in Kansas City. And of course, Roy was always there to advise Walt and help him. And then this is Walt's perspective on Roy growing up and being Roy's brother. We were great pals, and anything that happened, I'd tell him. I never kept anything from Roy. If Roy had a brand new tie, I'd wear it that day to school, and I'd usually end up with chili and beans on it somewhere. Then I'd sneak it home before Roy got back and take the tie off, hang it up, and when Roy'd go to put it on to go out with his girls, he'd see chili beans on it. He used to get mad at me, but it was funny. We'd argue and fight, but crawl into bed, and we'd go to sleep, and we'd tell each other the latest stories that we'd heard.
That is literally like the tale of oldest
time. Yes.
What is it?
The tale as old as time. Wow.
Which is a very Disney saying, but I feel like every sibling ever, if you have any relationship at all, you can relate to that.
Especially if you're close. Like if you, which is crazy that they were so far apart in age, but so close like that.
Yeah.
Like 8.5 years. That's a lot.
That's a lot.
So I also read that their closeness only strengthened over the years, even like working together for all those years and all the time that they spent together and how different their personalities were. You'll see they were polar opposites.
Wait, and did you say that they shared a bedroom or am I just making that up?
Yeah, they would. It says that they would go to bed and like
talk about it.
Yeah. Okay, talk bed. About their day.
So I bet you that has a big, like that's a big reason why they were so close. Sharing a bedroom, like you have to be in each other's business.
Yeah.
But also I feel like you have to get along or your life is just miserable. Like,
right.
If you're sharing the same space.
You can't poop where you eat.
Yeah, exactly. That probably was like the buffer or the reason that even though there was such a big age gap, they were so close. It was like they were forced to be close.
Yeah. So Walt was obviously the adventurous one. We can definitely see that in everything that he did in his life. But Roy was the conservative. And usually this left Roy scrambling to fund any new idea that Walt had.
What an oldest sibling problem.
Honestly. So I actually didn't know this until, which you said that you found this out whenever we went to Disneyland or Disney World. And they had like the little
Disney
museum.
World, yeah.
And
yeah, right when you walk in, if my childhood memory is serving me correctly, right when you walk in, there's like a little museum. It's not even really a museum, but it's just like
a little exhibit,
little artifacts and yeah, things on the walls that say how Disney World came about, basically.
I have to go again just so I can see that.
Oh my gosh, for sure. So cool. I think I was in sixth grade when we went. So.
And you still remember.
Yeah.
But yeah, we need a refresher. But anyways, I didn't realize this, but Walt and Roy's relationship was literally the cornerstone and the entire reason that the Disney company exists. And Walt took the creative direction and then Roy was the head of the business side. But when it came down to it, it was simple. It was just two brothers who loved, fought, and supported each other in any way that they could. Like, literally.
To the fullest.
Yes. Like, they...
Soulmates.
They crafted their entire lives bent around each other. Roy a little bit more than Walt. Roy, like, definitely catered to Walt more, but...
But Walt could have been like, this is my dream. Like, right. I don't want you in this.
And it takes so much, just from our perspective, knowing what it's like to work with a sibling, you have to have so much resilience and patience and just like
both want, be able to forgive and both have the goal as,
yes, exactly,
like the cornerstone of your relationship instead of it being like,
you have to want to freaking work with your sibling. You have, yeah, to choose that that is what you want as your business partner and not just like a good business partner.
Yeah, with like day-to-day stuff, but also like massive business decisions. Like, you have to decide that no matter what happens, you're in it to win it together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So definitely on both of their parts, like, this was their choice. Okay. Also, speaking of siblings, did you know that they had two other older brothers and a younger sister?
Literally had no idea. Like, I remember going to Disney World and seeing a black and white photo of Roy and Walt, and I think like Mickey or something together.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I knew like they were the ones who really created, yeah, this whole thing. I had no idea that they had any siblings, like any other siblings. I literally thought it was just them two. I've never heard of another Disney.
Are you a fan of global travel? Are you wanting to see more of the world yourself? Well, then you're my kind of people. My name is DeAndre Koch, and I'm the host of the travel podcast, Revolutionizing Your Journey, where we share stories of everyday people making the most of global travel and also teach you how to do the same yourself. You'll hear stories from people just like you who learned how to travel for nearly free, like Jo, who realized she could take her daughter to Disneyland in Tokyo for cheaper than in the US, or Rob, who flew his entire family of seven to Europe round trip in business class, all for less than the price of economy. Check out the link in the description for the Revolutionizing Your Journey podcast to learn how to elevate your own travels.
Yeah, that's probably because like the two older brothers were basically excommunicated from the family. The younger sister, I don't know. I didn't find any like crazy drama or anything with her, but she's just like not mentioned that much.
And there are five of them.
Yes, five of them total. So when Walt was around like four or five, his younger sister, the only sister, was three. Roy was 12 or 13. And then the two older brothers, Raymond and Herbert, were 16 and 18. And at that point, the Disney family moved from Chicago to the little farm in Marceline, Missouri. And that is the place that like it's rumored about and talked about. But that little town is what Main Street USA in Disneyland is like modeled after.
So cool.
So
I feel like Disney World, like there are so many layers to it that you, yes, can just like keep peeling back all of the,
oh my gosh,
meaning and where it came from, origin story, stuff like that.
It's Taylor really Swift cool. Like claims to be the queen of Easter eggs, but Disneyland and Disney World, like there's like hidden,
oh,
Mickeys
my gosh,
everywhere,
in the carpet, like, in the design, yes, of like the walls.
There's like little so stories cool behind everything.
I can imagine so being so like big picture, but also so detail oriented. Yes. Like they had the perfect balance. But I was going to say something about the sibling dynamic. Uh-huh. It's interesting because I feel like Roy is a true middle child. Like he's not the oldest and he is,
yes,
almost like smack dab in the middle of the younger two and the older two, uh-huh, which he's closer in age to the older two. But it's weird that the sister and Walt weren't closer because they're literally like, what, 2 years apart, you
I
said?
I know, yeah.
And then Roy is only 3 years younger than the other brothers.
Right.
So weird that, and he's 8 years older than Walt. So those two had the biggest age gap between
and all maybe of them. That's why, like maybe Roy was like, okay, all I do is fight with my older brothers, and like, they're older than me, they're more dominant, I like don't stand a chance with them. But like with Walt, I can, because he seems like a more sensitive, conservative personality, so maybe he just felt more comfortable
being
with
the protector.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I also, coming from a middle child,
you are like that with our baby sister for sure.
I naturally am just always closer to Audrey, like mentally, because I feel responsible for her, even though I'm the middle child and we're each only 2.5 years apart. So it would be easy for me to be like, peace out. Like, I'm the middle one. I'm not responsible for anything because I'm not the youngest or the baby.
Or the oldest.
Yeah. I'm also not the oldest. But so I can so see that in me. I prefer having more of a dominant, like protector, like supportive role.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't as much love being the little sister. Like, I don't as much like being your little sister as I like
you. Yeah, you don't like to accept help. You love to give it.
Yes. I don't know if that's like a middle child thing, because that is definitely how I am.
Mm-hmm.
Or if that's just we are the exception to the rule.
I feel like you're the exception to the rule, because I don't feel like that's not a middle child hallmark. And other middle children that I know are not like that. They're more like the loners, like kind of off on their own. Like, they are the first ones to move away, which you did move away.
Yeah.
But then you brought Audrey with you.
Yeah.
So.
And then like less than a year later, I invited my little sister.
Yeah. Invited our baby sister to go with her. And she did. And they lived together for a long time. But anyways, whenever the family moved from Chicago to Marceline, Missouri, those older two who were 16 and 18, they did not take the move very well. So just a couple months after they got there, they moved straight back to Chicago on their own.
Super understandable. I feel like I might have felt the same way.
Yes.
Like, you're a grown man. Why do you need to be with your family still? And your entire life you've lived in that other town. So
agreed. There's like a lot of like drama, and like people act like, oh my gosh, it's such a big deal. Like, I think they were just lazy. They didn't like farm work, or like, oh, there was like some giant falling out. And it could have been, definitely there was a giant falling out. Or, because I will say, Herbert doesn't get mentioned in any writings about Roy or Walt after that. And Raymond is only mentioned once, and it's not very flattering. But with how old they were and how long they had a life in Chicago, I feel like it could have been nothing. It could have been they just
literally already had their
literally
lives
wanted to be
started in Chicago. Yeah.
And then they grew apart for the rest of
their lives.
So I don't know.
Also, coming from someone who has experienced a sort of like falling out, when you moved to college, Cassie, I literally stopped talking to you for like 6 months, and we didn't even have a falling out. Like, there was
not at all.
There was no argument. Nothing happened.
I think
I just
was
felt
like
you ditched me. So for Walt and Roy, maybe they were literally just like, oh, they disowned us, when really they were just going to have like a normal relationship, but travel back and forth or something.
Yeah. And we are huge on expectations. So maybe the expectations from Roy and Walt were,
as the younger brothers, were not met by the older brothers.
Yes,
for sure.
And the whole abandonment thing, there could be something to that, because like we said, their dad, he had a temper and he was very strict and he was borderline abusive. And we'll talk a little bit about that more in a second, but maybe because that was going on at home, and the little brothers knew that the older brothers knew that that was going on at home, and they still left.
Chose to not stay and protect them.
Yeah.
They were really hurt by that. And maybe the older brother's perspective was like, I lived through it. I had the same childhood. I turned out okay. And I didn't have an older brother protecting me. So you'll be fine.
Yeah. And it
like,
was
just life
back in the early 1900s. So like, there was probably a lot of borderline abusive fathers, and they probably didn't even think it was that weird.
Right. Not as much mental health talk, not as much emotional support for
awareness.
Men or awareness.
But it is kind of intense, like how they were excommunicated. They were never involved in the Walt Disney Company. Herbert was a mailman, and then Raymond was an insurance salesman, and that's pretty much the extent of what we know about them. Like, that's it.
Crazy. I also, side note, I'm just like geeking out about their sibling dynamic, but I wonder how common that is when you have multiple siblings like that, where just two of them are close.
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, throughout adulthood, I feel like sometimes you switch in between, like, oh, I'm close with this sibling in childhood, and then this sibling for a couple years.
Yeah, this was like a permanent dynamic.
Permanent dynamic of like two of them are soulmates, ride or die, literally, yeah. like you said, shape their lives around each other. And then the other three are like, meh, take it or leave it. Like, I don't really care if they're around.
Not even take it or leave it. They're like, we're not even going to talk to you. Like, I'm not even going to spend time on it.
So like, why did they feel like they owed each other their lives and with their other siblings, which they're equally as related to and closer right. in age to?
Yeah.
They felt no obligations.
So weird.
Like, how does that happen? I don't know.
And we only have three total siblings in our family, and we're all three girls. So we're all very close, and we kind of all switch back and forth to, like, who's the closest.
Yes.
But since there's five and there's such an age gap, it, like, leaves more room for
permanent, like, set in stone.
Yeah.
Roles, I guess.
Yeah. Because with three, there's always one left out. So that person's just going to butt their way back in.
Butt their way back in or get so hurt that the other two feel bad. And yeah, they're like, oh. Crawling back. Yeah.
Yeah.
But for sure, I'm 25. Cassie's 28. Our little sister is 22. And throughout all of those years, we've been bouncing back and forth between who's best friends 100%. At any given moment.
Like literally musical chairs.
Yeah.
In later life, Walt's daughter said that he could still draw a detailed map of that childhood farm. And even in one of his backyards as an adult, he built a replica of the red barn he had. Like, he was so nostalgic and so, like,
romanticized
things. And even though his childhood, like, it doesn't sound horrible, awful, terrible, but there wasn't a lot of, like, just purely happy moments. Mm-hmm. And he only talks about the happiness in his childhood other than, like, one or two stories. The rest of it is rose-colored. Maybe that's just how his brain works, or maybe he does that very purposefully. But there is a quote that Walt used to say, "There's enough ugliness and cynicism in the world without me adding to it."
And so maybe because he wanted this like idealistic life, his older two brothers didn't fit into that. And so mm-hmm. he didn't know how to cope. Like, he literally just had to cut them out in order to keep that, like you said, rose-colored version of the world that yeah. he needed to live in.
Yeah. Walt and Roy really did not play much as kids. They mostly worked. Like I mentioned previously, their dad was very strict, and he believed in only using money for practical things. So he never bought them any toys or provided any allowance for them to go out and have fun. The only toys that Walt and his little sister Ruth owned were purchased by Roy when he had the opportunity to, like, pick up a job around town. A job not from his dad, because his dad didn't pay him. But here's a quote from Walt about that. "Roy was the one who would always see that our little sister Ruth and I had a toy. Roy didn't have much money, but by gosh, he always saw that we had a toy. Roy always saw that we had little things like that. Roy was one of the kindest fellows I've ever known in my life to other people. He was a really kind-hearted guy. Roy is very mule-headed at times, too."
I was just thinking about this as you were talking. I wonder, too, because their dream was so outlandish and massive, and also, and like, no one had really done what they were wanting to do before them.
Mm-hmm.
If family members, like, just in my own life, or I don't know, seeing people who are just weird and have massive dreams, it's like you can either stay married to that dream or you can stay married to the people who want you stay in a box.
Yeah.
And for him to be able to carry out everything that the Disney company was going to be, he had to, like, cut out the people who were kind of, like, bringing him down or telling him he couldn't do it or just, like, weren't on board with his dream. But because Roy was so on board,
yeah,
it's like
he fit.
Grabbed him and just they ran together.
Wow, that's crazy. I didn't think about it like that, but that totally could be. Yeah. So during that harsh time in life, one thing that Walt clung to for enjoyment was drawing. The first time he ever showed any artistic inclination was when he took a bucket of tar and a paintbrush to their white barn walls. Obviously, he got in trouble for that. But his Aunt Maggie noticed and bought him a sketchbook and a box of pencils, which is so precious.
How cute.
I know. I also read that he received no positive reinforcement from his family. So the encouragement that he did get during this time was really influential and meant a lot to him. He used to tell of a time when a nearby doctor asked him to draw a sketch of his horse, and the doctor, like, stood there and held the animal still while Walt worked with his pencil. So cute. He said, "I was about 7. The result was pretty terrible, but both the doctor and his wife praised the drawing highly, much to my delight."
So precious.
Walt. Their dad did, again, love and support his kids, though. When Walt was 14, Elias paid for him to join an art class at the local college, even though they were the poorest that they would ever be at that moment. The farm in Marceline had failed, so the Disneys moved to Kansas City and their dad purchased a paper route. And this was the time in the brothers' lives that, up until just a couple months before Walt died, he claimed to still have nightmares about. It sounds freaking dramatic for a paper route, but here's a quote from Walt that I think, like, actually tells why he felt that way. The papers had to be stuck behind the storm doors. You couldn't just toss them onto the porch. And in the winters, there'd be as much as 3 feet of snow. I was a little guy and I'd be up to my nose in snow. I still have nightmares about it. What I really liked on those cold mornings was getting to the apartment buildings. I'd drop off the papers and then lie down in a warm corridor to get warm. I still wake up with that on my mind. On nice mornings, I used to come to houses with those big old porches, and the kids would have left some of their toys out. I would find them and play with them there on the porch at 4 a.m. when it was just barely getting light. Then I'd have to tear back to the route again.
Oh,
I know.
Just a little deprived child.
Yes, and he's 9 years old, waking up at 3:30 a.m. to go, like, trudge through the snow. And then on nice days, he's, like, finding all these toys and, like, seeing, like, these big, nice, warm houses that, like, other kids get to live in. And he knows, okay, they're sleeping in their beds and I'm out here trudging through the snow. He's 9 years old.
And not getting paid for it.
And they have toys that he has never gotten an opportunity to have. So it's just, it's like creating this, wow, it really is me against the world.
Mm-hmm.
So while it does sound like super sad for Walt and Roy to grow up with little purely happy times, it did serve them in the sense that they grew up unafraid of work, and then this lifestyle was a huge advantage for an entrepreneur. They were able to handle constant struggle with little to no reward and still keep their eyes on the prize. And I wonder, since Roy was out there with him during all of that, if those shared experiences is what connected them so deeply and so permanently, like it's us against the world.
They had shared trauma.
Yes, because most sources say, honestly, outside of their immediate families, Walt and Roy had very few close friends. And you can see it when you look at the company shares, the Disney company shares. That insider circle is very small. On the day that he died, the Disney family owned approximately like 34% of the Walt Disney Productions, and the rest was all public. But those included in the list of family members who held a portion were the brothers, their wives and kids, and their grandkids. Like literally just them and their offspring.
And what years was he a child in?
Whenever he is like in his 20s, it is the 1920s.
Okay, so you see, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Which is really weird because I'm thinking like Gatsby, like parties, like this is the roaring 20s, like everyone's out being very outgoing and extroverted and parties are the thing. And they were like building this massive company and not in the party mode at all. Like they were in like you said, very tight circle.
Uh-huh.
No one's allowed in.
Yeah, even as
they weren't the rich, like, bougie partying people, I guess.
No, even as they, like, did get more successful later in life, they, like, had nice things and had, like, a nice home and a nice area, but they never had parties and they didn't live, like, super extravagant. They kind of stayed those, like, Midwestern boys their entire life.
Mm-hmm. But I think that that was, like, very purposeful. Maybe the time that he was growing up in, because you said he was in his 20s, in the 20s.
Uh-huh.
That contrast or that comparison of like all of these other people are getting to party and have right. fun and it's a lot of just like play and I'm having to just work
yeah
for little to no reward, it just made the contrast like yes. worse in his mind,
just solidified that like okay, I'm different,
deprivation,
like, I'm kind of an outsider.
Yeah.
It's speculation, but actually a lot of people have wondered if Roy and Walt's relationship with their parents is what caused them to view basically all other humans with distrust. There's no evidence recorded anywhere of Walt having a long-standing relationship or deep intimacy with any single person outside of his big brother Roy and his wife and children. He also rarely brought his work home with him. He compartmentalized those relationships. That was who he like really trusted and had deep relationships with, and he didn't work with those people. And then the people that he worked with, he did not have like a personal, like deep intimacy with. This isn't to say that he was like not kind to his employees, though there are a lot of testimonies of his sentimental generosity towards longtime employees. They definitely felt appreciated. They just didn't get a look into like Walt's innermost thoughts and feelings. He presented himself in a very like storybook character way, the mischievous, good-hearted, average American boy archetype, but that was all anyone ever really got from Walt. He had certain little anecdotes that he would recycle through when he was asked about himself, but they were a pretty airtight like mask that hid the other side of Walt Disney, the one who mistrusted all humans and rejected intimacy. And from what I've read of Roy, he was less like picturesque and dreamy in his presentation, but he was every bit as private and estranged as his brother was. This was actually probably one of the most helpful qualities of the brothers' business strategy in keeping like control and ownership of everything that they would later create. And for as isolated from the world as they were closer to each other. I grabbed an excerpt from the Disney version by Richard Schicknell. He's like a historian, and he talks about their brotherhood and their relationship. In effect, Roy was the intelligent and worldly comptroller, not only of the company that they formed and nurtured in later years, but of Walt Disney's personal growth. At times, he was the conservative, the one who urged him to go slow, to build with care, but he was also, like any good surrogate father, the one who would find, when necessary, the ways and means of clearing the way for the younger man to express himself.
What the crud is a comptroller?
I know, I had to look that up. It basically is like a manager. It says it's a royal household or government official who examines and supervises expenditures. Richard also says that the record is full of tensions between the brothers, but it was, for the most part, a healthy tension of the sort that nurtures intelligent creative effort. Displayed on Roy's office wall in later years was the peace pipe that Walt gave him to patch up one of their fights. And here's a quote from Roy on his reputation. He said, "I've been made the skinflint, but I really wasn't. All I've been trying to do is help Walt do what he was trying to do." Roy Disney. And here's another clutch definition.
I was going to say, I'm going to need the definition for a skinflint.
Yes. A skinflint is a person who spends as little money as possible. So he's like, I'm not trying to just like hoard all the pennies. I'm trying to actually like make this money go further and like go far enough to where Walt can actually accomplish what he's trying to do. So he gets a bad rap for like being this like crazy, strict money man, business genius. But all he was ever trying to do was allow Walt to realize his dreams. It was never about the money. When Roy turned 18, he ran away from home as quickly as he could. He snuck out one night to go to work on his uncle's farm and then move on from there, but he promised to eventually come back for Walt. Before he left, though, he had a little like coaching big brother moment with Walt, telling him that he no longer needed to put up with any beatings from their father. The punishment was unjust and he just shouldn't submit to physical punishment anymore. I guess Walt had like formed a habit of allowing his dad to get physical just to humor him or keep the conflict at a minimum, basically like
keep the peace.
Yes. But Walt really respected Roy. So in taking his brother's advice, Walt met his dad down in the basement where he always, quote unquote, punished him. And before his dad could hit him with his leather strap, he like grabbed his dad's arm. And after a little struggle, his dad dropped the strap and just started weeping. And after that encounter, he never raised a hand to Walt ever again.
Oh, that breaks my heart on both ends. Like so, the struggle of that dad not knowing how to express his emotions and like just feeling guilty for it, like knowing what he's doing. And then also for a child to have to do that with their parent, I can't imagine.
So sad. Oh. So although he wasn't living near Walt anymore, Roy continued to be a support to him. He landed him an apprenticeship at a cartoon studio and was always checking in with Walt. At 19, Roy got his first job that would help him develop the skills that he used to change the brothers' lives forever. He got a job as a bank teller, and eventually he listed himself in the Navy. Walt was still in high school after Roy left home, and this is when he got his first taste of freedom. Their dad saw an opportunity back in Chicago, so he sold his paper route in Kansas City and then invested the money in a jelly factory in Chicago. The whole family moved back to Chicago with the dad, and then Walt stayed back in Missouri to finish high school. Walt was obsessed with trains as a kid and honestly his whole life, you'll see later. But his dad and uncle had always told like stories of working on the railroad, and they actually were involved in blowing through the Rockies with dynamite. So they had lots of stories.
Crazy sounding.
Yes. And when Walt got the opportunity to work on the Santa Fe Railroad line himself, he jumped on it.
God, what a time to be alive.
Everything is like new. It's like all adventure and frontier. But actually, I say that Walt got the opportunity to work on the railroad line, but actually Roy was the one who got him the job. The position was for a news butcher, which I had to look up what that was,
too. All these like, things.
This is not 1900. It was like basically he worked on the railroad line. He would travel with the train cars and he would sell like apples and newspapers and tobacco and that type of stuff to the train's passengers and the crew. So Roy paid the $15 bond needed to secure the job position, which I'm like,
you had to pay to get a job.
Yes.
So you said that the family moved back to Chicago, but mm-hmm. Walt stayed behind.
Yeah.
I wonder if that is also the sole reason that they're not as close to the little sister, because I'm assuming the little sister moved with the parents because Walt was still in high school. So maybe she was in middle school still, like just a little bit younger. Also, she was a girl. So they probably were like, we're not leaving you alone. But also, it's so interesting that they left Walt by himself as a high school student. Like, did he just live by himself or?
I don't know. I don't know if he lived with family. Like friends or family or anything, but it doesn't say. But our dad, like, you still live, like, not live.
Like, at 14, he was like, I had my motorcycle's license, and I was good to go.
And at 7, he was, like, staying home by himself all day, every day.
Oh, at, like, 4 or 5. Like, he would walk home from kindergarten by himself, go to the corner store, buy a can of ravioli, go home and cook it on the stove by himself at 5.
And that was in the 70s, and this is in the 1910s, so it was just a different time.
Yeah, it was a different time.
The problem with this railroad job that Walt got was that he was a terrible businessman. Here's actually a quote from Roy about it. He'd leave his locker unlocked and then come back and find a bunch of empty Coke bottles and some of the candy gone. He wasn't attending to business, so he ran a loss. And who do you think paid for those losses? That's literally what Roy said. He was like, let me tell you something.
It's me. I'm the one paying for it. What a like little sibling thing to do. Just not a care in the world knowing that, I've got a safety net. Someone will take care of it.
My big brother will pay for that. It's freaking fine.
But I also think that like Roy is a bigger part of Disney than we think. Like the Disney company. 100%. Because if Walt is like the dreamer, the creative, the fun one, He would not get nearly as far without
nearly as far.
His better half being a actual businessman, strategic, like knowing what he's doing, moving the company forward.
You will see how well Walt did by himself. Okay, that's all I'll say. Like you said, it didn't matter much to Walt. He got to wear a uniform, which impressed all the girls. He was able to see the country and learn how to work the engine from the conductors. So like, that's what he wanted from that job. That was enough. When the summer ended, he did join his family in Chicago and started working for his dad again at the jelly factory. And he also got a second job as a mailman, and he was able to save up $70, and he bought a camera on the installment pay plan. Like,
oh my God, Afterpay back in the 1910s. Even before that, like, you just bought things on credit, like with your name.
People were like,
I'll just
okay,
sign my name and I'll take this home.
Come back and pay for that later. Okay, cool.
Like what?
Well, Walt was working at the post office during the summer of 1918. There's a year for you, Beth. On our little timeline. He met up with his big brother, Roy, at the training station for the Navy, because Roy was enlisted in the Navy at this point. So, of course, Walt never wanted anything more than to be like his older brother. So, though he was only 16 years old, he got it in his mind that he wanted to serve his country, too. After all, it was the Disney tradition thus far among the brothers to leave home as early as possible. But the Navy wouldn't take him. Obviously, he was too young. But one of his friends told him that the Red Cross started accepting at 17 years old. He was still a few months shy of that age, so he'd need help from a guardian to get a passport and pull it off. He asked his dad first to help him, like, forge a passport. His dad was like, forget it. No. His mom stepped in, though, because the other boys had left and, like, she hadn't even known where they were going. So with Walt, she was like, okay, if he's gonna leave home at such a young age, I want to at least know where he is. Mm-hmm. So she was like, okay, I will help you get into the Red Cross. I'll know you're like with other people, somewhat safe maybe. And she signed the little thing, and then Walt like scribbled in a date that wasn't actually his birthday. And then he was able to go to Europe. By the time he was accepted, the First World War was over, but the mess in Europe was still like very much alive. So for a little over a year, Walt lived in France and drove a Red Cross truck. He also used his artistic talents over there to make a little money for the first time. He was adopted by an entrepreneurial, like, spirited guy and basically a con man. And together they made, like, freshly manufactured enemy helmets into war trophies, like, complete with bullet holes and, like, all the drama.
What?
To sell to soldiers going home so that they could have, like, I was in the war. Look at this.
Oh, my gosh. What a cool experience, though. At such a young age, too.
Yeah.
Like, you're 16. Literally in a different country, like, running a whole show.
Yeah, with, like, all just other men, like,
adults.
Yeah. Yes.
And so, from, like, different backgrounds as well. Like, mm-hmm. He probably learned a lot, saw a lot. And for the first time, he was, like, actually free from...
Yes, he was on his own. Yeah. And in, like, a foreign environment. Like, he had stayed back when his family moved to Chicago, but he stayed in the town that he kind of was already growing up in and living in. But this is, like... new territory.
On all fronts.
Yeah.
I also think that Walt feeling comfortable enough to ask his dad to forge,
like,
an actual document, I feel like shows that they still had, like, a pretty okay relationship. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're terrified of your father or you're not going to ask for a favor like that or ask them to bend the rules for you. So,
right.
I don't know. I'm just, like, trying to picture this family dynamic and put pieces together.
There was a basis of knowing, we are... for each other, you know? So once Walt got back from Europe, it was time. He was, like, waiting till the day he got back to start on his cartoon career. So his dad obviously was pretty disapproving of this career choice, predictably.
As parents are.
Yes. He had a job, like, waiting for Walt at the jelly factory. So maybe it was, like, to avoid that situation and that conversation. But instead of setting himself up in Chicago, when Walt got back from Europe, he went straight to Kansas City. And he was hoping to land an artist apprenticeship with the Kansas City Star newspaper. Feelings were not mutual. They denied his application for a job in the art department, and he even tried a second time to get in as an office boy, and they were like, no, we do not want you.
Kansas City, is that where he went to high school?
So first Chicago, that's where he's born. Then Marceline, Missouri is where the little farm was, and that's when his brothers went back to Chicago. So it was just Roy, Walt, and their little sister Ruth. And then they moved from there to Kansas City. That's when the newspaper route was bought. And Walt stayed there for high school while his family moved to Chicago. He did work for his dad in Chicago for a little bit before he went to France. But then when he came back from France, he didn't go back to Chicago.
He went straight to
Kansas City, where, like you said, he had finished high school. So Walt's first job in Kansas City paid $50 a month and lasted 6 weeks. He was able to learn a lot, though. It was an apprenticeship in a commercial art studio doing work for, like, an advertising agency. Here's a quote from Walt about that job. When you go to art school, you work for perfection. But in a commercial art shop, you cut things out and paste over and scratch around with a razor blade. I've never done any of those things in art school. Those are time-saving tricks.
So I just looked up Marceline to Kansas City. It's only an hour and 45 minutes.
Wow.
And they basically just moved from more rural to the city, but, like, the closest big city.
Okay. So it was for sure definitely still, like, home.
Home to him. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At the commercial art studio job, he also met a man named Ub Iwerks, who you will see is a massive player in the Disney story that was to come. He was another artist, and honestly, he had more artistic talent than Walt did, and he also was more interested in the technology and, like, practices of creating art, the new, like, frontier of all of the new mediums that were coming out. Like, this is the 1910s and 20s, so this is when, like, motion pictures are coming out and everything is new.
TV is just new, yeah. Mm-hmm. Not even TV. Like, film is new.
Yes, the cinema.
What a name, though. Ub Iwerks.
Ub Iwerks.
I feel like you have to be, like, an artist or, like, a cartoonist to pull off that name, but it sounds like
it sounds,
a production.
Yeah, it almost sounds like Pixar or something.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
Iwerks. So you would think, okay, he's into more, like, the actual details and the practice of creating art, Ub Iwerks is. And then Walt is more, like, big picture, entrepreneurial. He wants to, like, create a company. So you would think it would be the makings of a perfect partnership. But the art company that they co-founded together in Kansas City was called Iwerks Disney Commercial Artists, and it went under in less than a month.
Oh.
Yeah. In most of the 1920s, Walt Disney was running so hard just to stay alive and ahead of the bill collectors that he really wasn't focused on art or genius or like how to be poignant.
Oh my gosh, every 20-year-old ever.
By 20 years old, he was the president of a cartoon company which he founded called Laugh-O-Grams. The previous year, he had done some like animated comedic commercials that were shown in the local Kansas City theater, and people loved them. They were a success. So naturally, he wanted to up the stakes and do something a bit more daring. Animated fairy tales. He was inspired by a New York animator who was taking Aesop's fables and spoofing them for the silver screen. Instead of doing parodies, though, Walt had the idea of just modernizing classic children's stories. Instead of walking around the forest, the big bad wolf in Little Red Riding Hood would drive in his magic car to grandmother's house, and grandma would be on her way to the movies.
Wow, very Jetsons-esque.
Yes, so cute. I love
very
it.
Very futuristic.
It was his first cartoon fairy tale film, and he worked for 6 months on it with the help of a few local cartoonists, fun fact, including a high school student who later would co-found the Warner Brothers and MGM cartoon studios.
And this is in Kansas City?
In Kansas City, just some random little high schooler.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
What is in the water here?
Walt's films were slightly crude, though, so selling the product was tough. Little Red Riding Hood wore black tights and high heels under her knee-length dress.
Oh my god, a childhood film. How risque.
He did eventually successfully sign a contract with a company for $11,100, which was amazing.
Yeah, dang.
But they only ended up ever getting $100 from that contract. The money was set to be dispersed over the length of the agreement, but the company went out of business after the first payment. So in 1923, I'm laughing, but this is like horrible. In 1923, just 2 years after its conception, Laugh-O-Grams closed due to financial failure. In the last few months, Walt was unable to pay his rent, so he moved into the Laugh-O-Grams office and he ate on credit at a little coffee shop nearby.
A proper starving artist.
Literally. Because years later, he told the story that he was so hungry and lonely that he was tempted to go to a restaurant and then eat. And then after he was done, tell them that he couldn't pay. But he didn't have the nerve to do it.
I mean, just some character building activities here.
The struggle. At this time in Walt's life, his two jobs were stay alive and stay free. He had dreams to have a life that he actually wanted, not that he was just obligated or had to live. He wanted to have the privilege of giving the world a unique gift, to choose how he spent his days, and to stay free of the prison that he watched his dad live in. He declared bankruptcy and sold his camera for $5, bought a nice pair of shoes. His briefcase was cardboard and the fabric was like falling apart, but he was free. The last project that he worked on was never finished at the little studio in Kansas City. When the door closed, Walt packed his suitcase to head west and took the unfinished film, Alice's Wonderland, with him to California.
Stop.
Little hints of what's to come. But it'll be a long time, so just hang on.
Wow. And he's like 23 here.
It's crazy. And I came to Hollywood. I was just free and happy. I was 21 years old. 21.
Oh my gosh.
But I'd failed. I think it's important to have a good, hard failure when you're young. Walt Disney.
So we're right on track. This is great.
We're there. Thank you, Walt, for that validation.
Yeah.
Roy is actually the reason that Walt moved to California after his second company, Laugh-O-Grams, went bankrupt. Roy was honorably discharged from the Navy after contracting tuberculosis and was recovering at a veteran hospital in LA when he sent his brother money to pack up and take a train west. Walt honestly had no evidence to think that he would be successful in California or that it would be any different from Kansas City at all. But he had his brother's support to push him forward towards his goals.
Okay, so I'm really like piecing this together here.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
Roy is literally the only reason Walt is who Walt is. Like, he's the only, like, okay, Walt had the dream, and so obviously you need him.
Right, like Disney wouldn't Mickey be Disney without Walt Disney. But Disney
would not be Disney without Roy. That is crazy because I really don't think, like what I'm hearing from this is I don't think that Walt would have ever had the freedom or ability to take all of the risks and like fail as many times as he did without Roy, because Roy was such a safety net for him.
Yes.
That he wasn't ever that worried. Like, he was like, oh, I can risk it. I can start this business. I can do this. I can try that. And was able to fail enough to get to the place where he wasn't a failure anymore. Yeah. But he would have had him that luxury. Like, yes. Roy literally gave him that luxury.
He would have had to survive and just kind of sacrifice those huge, lofty dreams and goals. Without Roy, Disney wouldn't exist, because you can't sacrifice like food. You can't sacrifice like a sustainable life.
And if you like, so even just like mindset wise, you don't have that comfort in knowing.
Right.
That someone is.
It changes everything.
Yeah.
Someone is there for you. Someone, first of all, someone believes in you.
Yeah.
Second of all, someone has your back and you can try something very, very risky and you're going to be okay.
Yeah.
Even if it's hard. You're never going to
hit rock bottom, because right. Someone is always going to be there to like cushion your fall. I'm sure mindset wise that changes everything.
Disney wouldn't exist without Roy.
Siblings, man.
Walt's daughter, Diane, told her perspective on what her dad was thinking when he moved to California. Obviously, she wasn't around, but she heard like lots of stories. And I'm sure that he told lots of grand, extravagant stories Tales. About his early days. And she said that his head was packed with ideas. Some way, somehow, when he got to Hollywood, he'd get to the top of the movie heap. He didn't even have a plan or like a vision for what he wanted to do. He was just going to break into the movie business. Point blank, period. Walt had two superpowers, though, that the other movie moguls in Hollywood did not. First, he knew what the average American wanted, what would hit home for them, because he was them. Second, he had Roy. Walt knew he lacked the business skill, clearly, that it would take to be successful in Hollywood. So he proposed that he could be the artist and the creative director, and that Roy could assume the roles of producer and business manager. Roy knew nothing about the movie business, and he wasn't sure that he'd be able to learn and master the job, but his little brother Walt was literally begging him. Roy had always shown an overwhelming responsibility when it came to Walt for his well-being and for his happiness. Like, he didn't just want Walt to survive. He wanted Walt to get to live his best life. So though he didn't know if he, Roy, had what it took, he was confident in his brother's talents and vision, and he would do anything in his power to help him realize his dreams.
Oh, he was going to find a way.
And even if it didn't work, he'd go out swinging.
Yeah,
like, he would
die trying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Here's Walt. It was in July, I think, of 1923. I was 21, going on 22. Now, my brother Roy was already in Los Angeles. Both of us were unemployed.
Sounds familiar.
We solved the problem by going into business for ourselves.
Also sounds familiar.
We established the first animated cartoon studio in Hollywood. Walt. He was first.
A little business lesson for you folks out there. If you are first, you are automatically given the upper hand.
Like, yes.
You can be trash, but if you're first, people don't realize that you're trash because there's no competition.
Retweet. You either have to be different, best, or first. But if you can, always be first.
And he was different. He was the best, and he was first. And Bethany that is has why given us, Walt Disney World exists.
And Bethany has given us the perfect segue from episode one into episode two, because though Walt Disney was the best, is the best, he was not always that way. So thank you for listening to part one of the Disney Brothers. On the second episode, we are going to be talking betrayal, marriage, mental breakdown, and of course, we are eventually going to get to Mickey Mouse.
Mickey Mouse is on the horizon.
He's coming. Click on episode two. It's already loaded in your Apple Podcasts or Spotify app, and we will see you there.
Bye.